Here they come. Turn four. Final lap.
Rev up your engines and get ready for the racing weekend.
Checker flag.
It's Chasing Checkers with your host, Chase McCabe, on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And that's right, everybody. Welcome in once again to the Daytona International Speedway for a very special edition of Chasing Checkers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe live at the Daytona International Speedway here with you for the next 2 hours, usually a one-hour show, but 2 hours today. We have a lot of special guests lined up for you. Steve Post, who was on the show yesterday, is going to come by again. We're going to talk to the Thunderbirds. Eric Moses of the Nashville Super Speedway is here. We're going to talk to drivers Greg Biffle, Ross Chastain. You never know who else you're going to hear from here on the show. And it is presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and also Backyard Blues Pools. Appreciate them for joining us. You know, we had Clay Greenfield on the show yesterday. Unfortunately, he didn't make the truck race. So hated to see that, but good to catch up with him, and glad that Backyard Blues Pools was on that truck, and it was a very good looking truck. So hopefully they can run some more races later in the year. But today is the day. It is the morning of the Daytona 500, and this is such an amazing event. I've been here since Thursday, did the duels, did the truck race, did the Xfinity race, did the ARCA race. I've seen five races already, but obviously I am ready for the one that is coming up a little later on this afternoon. A couple of housekeeping things to tell you about. Number one, you can listen to that race starting at 12:30 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But you can also join the Nashville Super Speedway and ESPN 102.5 The Game for the official NASCAR Daytona 500 watch party that is going to be later today at 3rd and Home at 919 3rd Avenue North, starting at 1 o'clock. So NASCAR fans and sports fans alike are encouraged to come out and join in on the fun. And you can enjoy, of course, their menu and all the drinks there at 3rd and Home. Those in attendance can take the opportunity to purchase tickets for this summer's NASCAR Triple Header Weekend, and they'll have a chance to win great prizes courtesy of ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Nashville Super Speedway, Music City's home for NASCAR Cup Series racing. And again, President Eric Moses going to join us at the end of this hour at about 8:45 this morning. So be sure to tune in for that. But it's been such a fun few days here at the Daytona International Speedway. And, you know, all the drivers are with the unknowns with the car. You know, I think that's all going to go out the window on that first lap because you got to go race. And, you know, what I have noticed over the weekend is watching the truck race, watching the Xfinity race, watching the ARCA race, the duels the other night, you've seen these teams kind of take their time and ease into it and know that it's a long race and you can't win it on the first lap, but you can lose it on the first lap. And so I expect that with the Daytona 500 later on today. I know some people have prognosticated that there are going to be a lot of wrecks, and maybe there are because of the unknowns with the car, but I think that you're going to see a little bit of patience early on. But what's interesting is you're going to have to get aggressive at some point. And Denny Hamlin was asked in his press conference the other day if he thought that sometimes drivers were a little too nice.
I don't know if they're too nice, but you have to be selfish, obviously. You know, I think that's you can't win if you're content on just helping someone else. I mean, you know, if I help someone else, there's selfish reasons behind it. It might look like I'm trying to help someone. I'm trying to help myself. That's just kind of the way it is. And, you know, in this world of, you know, manufacturer alliances and all that stuff that has really been a prominent part of our racing, you know, the bottom line is I've made a career at Super Speedways the last 10 years just, you know, counting on other people being selfish. And then when the rubber hits the road at the end of the race, you know, the guy in eighth place pushing seven of the same manufacturer in front of him eventually is going to get tired of waiting and know that his time has run out and he has to make a move. And that's when I typically can capitalize. So that's kind of how it's worked in the past. And drivers will always be selfish, especially at the end of the 500.
So whoever wins this race is going to have to be selfish. That's just how it goes. I mean, you saw it last night in the Xfinity Series race that you had to make the move there at the end. Austin Hill ended up getting the win from Richard Childress Racing. There was a wreck at the end. Myatt Snyder with a fire crash. He is okay, which is good. But, you know, that's Daytona. That's what happens. AJ Allmendinger was leading, and Austin Hill goes for it, gets the win. You had Noah Gregson that was behind them, and he was going for it. He ends up third. I mean, that's just how it goes sometimes. You got to be able to go after it. And even with this new car and the unknowns with it, that all is going to go out the window because you got to go try and win this race. Speaking of winning races, Brad Keselowski goes to Roush and forms Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. New team, obviously, organization's been around for a while. And what does he do in his first race with them officially outside of the Clash? He goes and he wins. He wins his duel the other night and talked about how important that was for this organization moving forward.
It's just really good, and it's just so important. You know, there's a lot of guys and gals on my team, you know, that never won a race before, you know. The company hasn't won a race in 5-6 years now, 5.5, something like that. And, you know, that's any kind of race. So it's really important to get that winning habits built up, and the only way you can really do that is to go win. So, you know, that builds confidence in each other and builds expectations, and not just the expectations were already there, it's probably the right word. It builds a reality that those expectations can happen. So, you know, we had a really poor showing at the Clash, and we needed something to offset that, and this is a great offset for that.
What kind of confidence does that do? And Chris Buescher, his teammate, won the other duel. So they swept the duels. They're sitting on the second row. Rick Hendrick, his team, is sitting on the first row. They swept that with Kyle Larson winning the pole and Alex Bowman on the outside pole. But Brad brings something different to that team. He brings confidence, obviously. He's done a lot of winning. He brings a lot of knowledge to a team that hasn't won, like you said, in about 5.5 years, whatever it's been. And so I think that makes, you know, him dangerous right out of the gates, because he's got a chip on his shoulder that he knows he made took a huge risk leaving Penske, a place he had been for a majority of his career, won a championship, and now he's going to Roush to try and revive that program, that challenge that is there for him. I think that makes that team dangerous. And I think Chris Buescher is a very talented race car driver, much more than maybe people give him credit for. And so you put those two together and sky's the limit. Jack Roush has been, you know, renewed. Greg Biffle talked about that, you know, used to run for him. And basically the reason he stepped away from racing is he got tired of fighting to stay on the lead lap every week. And that's where they were. So what does that do with the Daytona 500? Because think about it, you know, anybody can win this race, but if Keselowski shows up and wins the race, what that does for the confidence of that race team. So that's one storyline that you got to watch. He also talked about the new car and where they're at with that.
Yeah, I'm going to keep learning about these cars every time I get in them, and there's a lot to learn, you know, and they keep changing so much. And you know, we came down here for the test, and our car was not very good. Didn't have a lot of speed, drove really bad, and I knew we'd made a lot of changes from the test to come down here and learned a lot accordingly, and I was trying to kind of reset my brain from what I had at the test session, because what I had at the test session was, hey, if you can just make 200 laps, you'll be doing good. So we made some good changes, Matt McCall and the team did, and you know, I think I needed to put those to the test for sure.
I am going to be curious on some of the adjustments that teams make early on in the race, the feeling out process with this new car, because they haven't run all 40 cars at the same time. You know, practice sessions have been single car runs, and you've had some drafting here and there. Obviously you had the duels the other night, but the field was split in two. So it's definitely going to be a feeling out process early on, later on today in this race. In fact, you know, one thing with the draft, Denny Hamlin commented on this, that it's very easy to lose the draft in this new car. So if you're at the tail end of a line and you get, you kind of get a little bit of separation, you're going to lose the draft. So what does that do to some strategy? What does that do with this race today? Because 500 miles, obviously a long time. Denny Hamlin, I'm losing the draft.
It is, and there's a lot of factors that goes into cars losing the draft. I mean, I tried my best. I lined up and did everything I was supposed to do, and I was at the tail end. This is once I got lapped to the Toyotas because I was trying to push them forward, and I couldn't hang on. It just, there's nothing I could have done, you know, short of telling the person in front of me where to run on the racetrack to allow me to stay in there. But you can't do it. It's just these cars lose so much engine power behind others that it just doesn't make up for the drag that it the benefit is. So it's tough. It's it looks like four is the number where, you know, you can stay on in the tail end of a four car, but once it gets to five, the speeds pick up enough where that last car is really in trouble. So I think that while we can say that it's not, you know, it's the race could look like this or that, or it was only half the field, I do think of a lot of elements that you saw last night will happen on Sunday where the field gets strung out pretty wide.
That's Denny Hamlin on losing the draft with this new race car, which again is going to be a feeling out process. One last thing that I wanted to get to before we get to Steve Post from the Motor Racing Network. He's going to join us at our broadcast location here at the Daytona International Speedway. Kyle Larson, the defending Cup Series champion, comes into Daytona with very little testing and wins the pole and puts Hendrick Motorsports once again on the pole. His teammate Alex Bowman on the outside pole, which Hendrick Motorsports sweeping the front row. Honk if you've heard this before. So Jill Jelinek from Fox 17 sat down with Kyle Larson earlier this week via Zoom and talked about a lot of these different things, including sitting on the pole and the new race car.
First of all, Kyle, last night you won the pole for the Daytona 500. And with the win, Hendrick Motorsports has now swept the front row of the Daytona 500 for a total of 15 times now. How can you take advantage of starting on the pole on Sunday?
Yeah, that's a really amazing stat. Just proud of everybody at Hendrick Motorsports and bringing us a fast race car to start up front. So it'll be a lot of hard work, though, to stay up there. It's a tricky race with the draft, and you can shuffled out really easily. So yeah, it'd be difficult, but a challenge I look forward to. And obviously we have a really fast car, so I know my equipment can get it done. I just got to make the right decisions.
Speaking of your really fast car, this is the first season of the next gen car. You've been able to get a couple practices with the car. You had the qualifying last night and also Daytona duels tonight. What have you learned so far about the next gen car?
Yeah, not a ton, because Daytona is so different, and most of the practice that we've had has been single car runs. So once we get the draft tonight and the duels and then into the Daytona 500, we'll have to learn really quickly, I think. I wasn't here for the test in January, so, you know, I feel like I've got a bunch to learn still. But either way, I feel like the little bit that I did the other day, it didn't feel way different. Just a little bouncier. The steering was a little quicker and twitchy, but other than that, it so far felt fairly normal.
How confident can Kyle Larson be coming off last year? We're going to talk about that plus Hendrick Motorsports a little bit later on in the show, because I think Hendrick, once again, very dangerous. Jeff Gordon, Rick Hendrick addressed the media the other night. We will talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But when we come back, Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network, he is going to join me at our broadcast location here at the Daytona International Speedway. It is all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue, Shop Local, Shop Social, and Backyard Blues Pools here on ESPN. 102.5 The Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5, the game, streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe live at the Daytona International Speedway. It's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue, Shop Local, Shop Social, and Backyard Blues Pools. Appreciate them for jumping on board. We said we were going to talk to him again, and we are delivering. Steve Post of the Motor Racing Network is here, Steve, and we've seen a couple of days of pretty good racing here at Daytona, and it's just going to build up till tomorrow. I do want to go back to the truck race Friday night, and I think you and I were talking about this before you came on.
you kind of saw it building, as typically happens here at Daytona. They were running single file for a while, much like we saw in the duels, and behaving, but you get under 20 to go, they start to get together.
Chase, they just can't help themselves. They just can't. And I'll go back, even tying this back to the chase, or to the duel, the second duel. They just can't help themselves. Joey Logano knows that we have no cars back at the shop.
Yeah.
Chris Buescher knows we have no cars back at the shop. But with the checkered flag on the line, Chris is going to pull out a line to try to make a pass. Joey's going to block. And now we have a fewer car for the Penske team. Truck Series, same thing.
Yep.
They just can't help themselves, which is the greatest part about racers, is they race. You can pull the reins in. You can say we're going to do this and say we're doing that. But when it comes to that truck race, the last 10 or 15 laps, and you and I were chatting just before we went on here, and I think it was Grant Enfinger. He walked out of the carousel and said, we were trying to wreck for the last 10 laps.
Yeah.
And the irony of it is, Chase, is that had that wreck happened 15 feet or a half a second later or 15 feet further down the track, we wouldn't have even had a green-white checker. It was that close to get the caution light out and caution light on. Fascinating stuff with green-white checker and Zane Smith with a new team. Front Row Motorsports, and he loves travel stop Ford in Victory Lane. That sounds familiar because that's what we had at the Daytona 500 with Michael McDowell. Neat, neat story for sure.
And Michael McDowell has been fast this week.
Man, so that's one to watch. I'm telling you, my pick all throughout this has been Blaney. I just thought that.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, McDowell is making a case. You know, there's others making their case too, as we talked about with Brad Keselowski's team. But McDowell is like, don't sleep on me. Don't sleep on me. You know, there's been guys that have won this back-to-back in the past, and I could be that guy. So it's fascinating.
It's crazy, Steve, because, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of us that are race fans got into iRacing.
Yeah, that's
when it really, you know, and it had been around, obviously, for a long time, but watching it on TV. And I know when I'm doing a race at Daytona, and obviously I don't have the level of experience that these guys do, I'm shaking.
Yeah.
Because there's a paper-thin margin, and I watch these guys do it for what will be 200 laps on Sunday, and it's amazing that there aren't more wrecks than there actually are.
I'm fascinated by this. I was just the Kroger folks, Entenmann's Bakery, Thomas's English Muffins, and Ballpark Buns, that Great Bakery does stuff with Kroger with Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Yeah.
They gave me breakfast, so I just gave him a plug. Nice. Okay, we're all good. We got to take care of everybody here. The point is, you talk about how you're jumping up and down, your heart is racing. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is a fitness buff, and he has convinced me to get this. There's a little gadget on my arm, a little wristband. It's called a Whoop. And a Whoop is a very, very intense heart rate monitor. I mean, and it does everything from your sleep to your workout to this and that. Ricky's going to wear the Whoop during the Daytona 500. Patrick Mahomes wore one during the Bills game, and then they put the plays over what the heart rate was doing, and it was phenomenal. So I'm anxious to see. I was just talking to Ricky within the hour here, and he said, "Yeah, I'm going to wear my Whoop, and we're going to monitor and capture every detail with what my heart rate does, what happens with me inside the race car." So
I'm
fascinated with it. And because I'm with you, what these guys do is amazing. I think that's one of the greatest things that iRacing has done, is it's taken so many people behind the steering wheel, because you drive in Nashville.
Yeah.
I drive in Charlotte, Concord area. I can drive a car. They can drive a car. When you slide down into that simulator or behind your steering wheel and you realize, you know, they might be able to do some things a little bit better than I can do, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it on a sim rig and they're doing it at real speed. It's amazing what they do.
Steve Post is with us from the Motor Racing Network. Well, it's funny. The first time I got in there, you kind of go up through street stocks and have to work your way up and figure it out. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to hit Charlotte Motor Speedway. I got this. Don't even make it halfway through turn one, and I'm going around because you're on slicks, and you got to get used to that.
So much to it. The detail is so amazing. I am not an iRacer. My problem is I know me, and then if I ever sit down one time, then life as I know it has totally been changed. I have that personality where I'm going to be 6 hours a night doing it. I'm not smart enough to please step away from the steering wheel.
Yeah.
So I don't sit down in the first place. But the detail involved with it is absolutely amazing. And you're right. You don't think about the tire temperatures, the tire pressure, and things like that. But iRacing accounts for all of that. And you're slinging out of the ballpark and bouncing off the wall at Charlotte Motor Speedway, not even knowing what happened, you know.
You talk about heart rate, and when you're roaming pit road before this Daytona 500, I'm going to assume, I know me just walking through there, you can cut the tension with a knife. Yeah. I mean, you can feel it. You know, these drivers that embrace fans more than any other sport, there's more access than any other sport. They have that tunnel vision, that focus. You know, over the years of doing this, what's kind of some of the feelings you get from the morning of the 500?
There is no better morning in NASCAR than the morning of the 500. I love getting here early. And the sights, the smells, I'll even go out toward the infield so you can smell the bacon and the sausage from the campers. And we have campers. There ought to be a lot of bacon in the air because this place is full. They couldn't wedge another camper or car in here, I don't think, at this point. So I like that aspect of it. Then I like getting in the garage, talking to a crew chief or two. But you're right, that nervous energy. And when they make their way to the grid for driver introductions, which is when we traditionally get them here on MRN, and is when we traditionally get them, that tension is there are guys that even week in and week out give us real calm, cool, collected answers. There's an edginess before this race. There's an edge before this race when they know they're good. You know, when they know that they've got a good car. One that stands out to me is Joey Logano's always good here. He is just that happy go lucky, goofy, tall, lanky kid. Usually out on the grid here, he's just a little less chatty, a little bit more intense, and that's the intensity of it. And you see drivers sometimes focused. Maybe they're even signing autographs. You know, do you remember me? I got your auto. You signed this on the day of the Daytona 500. I'll guarantee you they don't because they're able to be respectful, but they are so zoned in. It is a Daytona 500 Sunday morning, tomorrow morning, best day of the year as far as the career goes. It's amazing.
Joey Logano is someone that, you know, I don't want to say has pressure on him, but, you know, it's so hard to win this thing once.
Yeah.
But once you do it once, you want to do it again.
Yeah.
And it's been, what, 7 years, I guess, since he won the Daytona 500. And he was the first to wreck the new car. So it's like he's put that on himself that, hey, I want to come out here in a backup car and win this thing.
I mentioned a little bit ago that my pick had been Blaney, but other guys are making their case. I think Joey Logano now is a better pick than he was 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. I got the chance yesterday. We had the practice show, and I had the chance. Joey showed up at the car a few minutes early, and I talked to him. And he told me from a career perspective, what happened in the duel is the worst thing that could ever happen. He said, you just feel – he said, I'll be a little bit hacked off if someone wrecks me. He said, when I do it, I'm mad, and
sure.
I'm mad at myself. And that's Joey is such a consummate professional. I mean, he worked with the crew to get the car put together. He talked to Chris Buescher. He did all the things he needed to do to repair everything, to make everything right. That's a guy there that I could see getting out on the start-finish line and saying, yeah, I know it cost us a race car, but we also have our second Harley J. Earls trophy. I think that's the kind of athlete Joey Logano is. I think I've never questioned Joey Logano's drive, but I bet you Joey Logano's drive is just a little bit more now after wrecking his team's race car, and because he's one of those guys. But you're right. The other thing is he's the lead dog at Penske.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously?
Seriously?
You're still little Joey. You're still sliced bread. You're still, you know, are you legal to be, you know, could you go out to a bar and have a drink? You know what I mean?
Right.
And he's the leader at Team Penske. And I think that, I think he takes a lot of pride in that. And what the direction of Penske looks like, I think he takes a lot of pride. And I think that's why his ego was bruised Thursday night is, wait a minute, I'm the leader of the team, and I just did a boneheaded move. And that's why I think I agree there's a lot of pressure on Joey for a lot of different reasons.
And I look at him, and maybe outside of Kyle Busch, is Joey the best example of a guy that maybe moved up a little too quick?
Yeah.
And the learning curve was steeper than people thought it was going to be. Loses the ride at Gibbs, but goes to Penske and just it clicks.
The Gibbs ride, remember back in that time period, and those not maybe they were not around, that was Tony Stewart's number 20 car.
Yeah.
And when Joey climbed into it, Joey climbed into Tony Stewart's number 20 car. 2 years later, when Joey climbed out of that car, Joey climbed out of Tony Stewart's number 20 car.
Right.
That was Tony's car. That was iconic, the Home Depot, Tony Stewart, championships, Greg Zippadelli, crew chief. What's this kid doing in Tony's car? And the fact that he was probably there a season or two quicker than he needed to be. Those two seasons were great, and Greg Zippadelli is one of the best teachers on the planet because Joey took those lessons learned. He was able to put aside the fact that he was in Tony's car, and he'll never be Tony. And then when the Penske opportunity came about, you know what that was? That was Joey's car. That became Joey's car.
Right.
Those 2 years of lessons with Greg Zipidelli, they paired him up with a great, great crew chief who will be an analyst on MRN. Todd Gordon's going to be one of our analysts who started at Auto Club next week. Paired him up with Todd Gordon, and all of a sudden it's like, this is my car. This is my Shell Pennzoil car. This is Joey's car. This is no longer, I don't have to hear Tony's car. This is my car. And that experience put him in the category where he was ready to go cup racing then.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Steve, another Penske guy, and a guy that I was impressed with last year, was Austin Cindric. Yeah. Was a rookie in the 500. Now he's going full-time. He could be one of those sleepers to watch tomorrow.
He could win a race. There's no doubt about it, and he could win tomorrow. He's good at these racetracks. He's really, really good at these super speedway races, for sure. Or super speedways. I'm trying to get into saying super speedway and not saying restrictor play tracks.
I know.
Yeah, I know he's a restrictor, but super speedway races, he's really good. This is a kid I used to cover. I, for 24 years, have been the voice of the summer shootout at Charlotte, the Legends of Bandolero Racing. He was one of my Bandolero kids. I remember when a little kid came out there and did the Bandolero when he could fit into a Bandolero. You know, just a great, great guy, great talent. He's gone to school. I think where you watch him is a potential tomorrow in the Daytona 500. He's good at this type of racing. I think when we get to road course racing, he's going to put himself in a spot where he's going to be in the handful of favorites when we go some road course racing as well. So I love – Team Penske has gotten young. When you had Harrison Burton over at the Wood Brothers, Ryan Blaney, they've gotten young. They, like, clicked their heels, and they gotten young, and they're all uber-talented. That's going to be a fun team to watch.
No doubt about it. Steve, thanks so much for the time. It's always good to talk to you. 2 days of this, it was fun.
I know.
Fun, so.
Absolutely. If you need anything throughout the season, let's chat. I'm open for it. I love chatting with you, Chase. I love Nashville. And I appreciate you guys carrying Motor Racing Network. That's the thing. We love our affiliates, and more important than that, we love our listeners who listen to our affiliates. So I'd love to chat anytime.
Yeah, we will do it for sure. The Thunderbirds are coming up next.
That's going to be fun. I'm the pre-race show. You got the Thunderbirds coming in now. That's it. So good stuff. Hey, great hanging out with you, Chase.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. More coming. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, live at the Daytona International Speedway. It is the morning of the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. The Big Daddy, this is the only sport that has their biggest event of the year to start their season, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Chase McCabe hanging out with you. It's all presented by Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools. Appreciate them. The Thunderbirds are in the house. They are, of course, part of the pre-race show, the flyover. It's a tradition, you know, not only the race, but you got to have the Thunderbirds. All right, so I'm going to have you both introduce yourself. Tell what you do with the Thunderbirds. We'll start with you.
Yeah, so I'm Thunderbird number 9, Captain Travis Grindstaff, call signs Angry. I'm the flight surgeon for the team, take care of 130 people and their families, as well as manage the pilots and their safety when they fly.
And I'm Thunderbird number 10, Captain Katie Moorcamp, call sign Jinx, the executive officer. So what I do is a little bit weirder, but we like to joke that I herd the cats and make sure everything behind the scenes is buttoned up and squared away.
So the Jinx, how'd you get that name?
It's a long story.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing when flying, but it's a good one for sure. So how long have you both been involved in this?
So I've been on the team since October. We recently did our changeover. Jinx has been on the team a little bit longer than me. So we do two-year tours on the team, so I'll be here for 2 more years.
So do you just get the same thrill every time?
Absolutely. Yes, this is my third year doing Daytona, and it still is exciting every single time we fly over.
So how many events would you say you do a year outside of the Daytona 500?
Yeah, we do about 70 different shows in 35 different locations every year.
How much training goes into this? Because, I mean, you got, obviously there's not a thin margin for error with
Absolutely.
All of this.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of training. We actually did our first ever winter training trip this year where we spent an entire month with the new team just learning all the new maneuvers, getting everybody used to doing this thing. So when we come here, we're at Daytona, we can provide our best to this event.
So I was telling my previous guest, Steve Post, that, you know, during the pandemic, I got on iRacing, which is the racing simulator. How much does a simulator play into training to be able to fly these things?
Yeah, so go ahead.
A huge amount. The boss actually spent hours in the simulator before this flyover just running scenarios over and over and over again. And all of the new pilots spend hours in the simulator as well before they even get in the cockpit of the F-16.
That's pretty cool. So F-16s is what we will be seeing. And how many are involved in this show?
The goal is to get 6 in the air.
Okay, wow. So
six planes. Everyone involved, there's about 50 people here. And when I tell you honestly that if one person, you know, wasn't here, we wouldn't be able to do it. It takes every single person working as hard as they can to get those jets in the air and do the flyover.
So are you two both going up today? Is that how it's going to be, or you'll be on the ground?
Yeah, so we're both going to be ground support for the actual air demonstration portion of the event. The six pilots that will be flying only about 18 inches apart, so it takes a lot of coordination and effort to make that happen, especially on time for the national anthem.
Wow. So it was funny. So I was in Nashville, obviously where I'm from, and I believe the Thunderbirds were doing a flyover for the Titans game. And standing on the sideline talking to people, and they were like, so where do they take off from, like John Toon or whatever? And they're like, no, they're in Florida. They'll be here. It's like, wait,
yep.
What?
Yep.
But it's kind of crazy to think about. That goes so fast, obviously, that you can take off from wherever and be at the stadium in plenty of time.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, it's funny with that. We're talking to the Thunderbirds here at the Daytona International Speedway. So why did you decide to work around planes for a living?
First off, we love them. I mean, it's like what we do in the Air Force. We are the world domination air power. You know, it's just we love what we do. Airplanes are fast. They're loud, just like NASCAR. That's why we love being at this event. It's a great way to open the show. I grew up loving flying. I actually ended up being a skydiver at the Air Force Academy.
Oh, cool.
So I started jumping out of perfectly good airplanes. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to fly in some good ones as well. So it's been an incredible opportunity.
What about you, Katie?
For me, I love seeing all the kids that really get excited about it, because I was that little kid at air shows watching the Thunderbirds getting really excited. And just seeing a kid's eyes light up when they see the flyover, when they see an air show, that's what gets me really excited, because you never know which one of those kids is going to be the next, you know, Thunderbird one. So,
How many people will say, yeah, I want to do this. I want to get in the plane, do the ride-along. I know some of the drivers did that. Mm-hmm. This week, and then they're the ones puking, and like I can't handle. I went in with the Blue Angels one time. I did the big berth of the C-130,
yep.
Fat Albert.
Yep.
Yeah, the C-130, and I thought I was going to lose it, and that was, you know, yes. Obviously very different than an F-16.
It's about 50-50. I'll let Angry speak to the physiology of it.
Yeah, it's 50-50, but you'd be surprised. We actually train everyone that flies with us the same way we train our pilots in the Air Force, which is really cool. And anyone who's interested, we're willing to share it with them and share this experience. Like Jinx said, the best part of our job is sharing what we do. We love what we do, but sharing it is absolutely the best part of every single day.
So why are you angry?
Yeah, another long story, right? So in the Air Force, your fighter squadron is actually who names you. So, you know, you go through this long process, and when they finally deem that you're ready to be named, we go through hours and hours making sure that you get the call sign that fits you, and it sticks with you forever. So we put a lot of effort into it.
So, like, when you're training and you don't have a call sign, you just you go by your name, essentially? Or
New guy.
Yep. Or new gal.
New guy. That's awesome. So it's kind of like a badge of honor. You earn the call sign.
Absolutely.
And it's yours forever.
Yeah, unfortunately, Maverick was taken, so yeah, they made me angry.
Yeah, does everybody want Maverick? Is that just kind of – or Goose or Maverick? Is that what it is?
I think you want a good story, and you want, you know, just like Angry said, that camaraderie, that acceptance, and you want a good story to back it up.
What does a movie like Top Gun do for you all? I mean, it's a great movie, for one. The new one's coming out. But it also shows just how cool being a fighter pilot can be.
Yeah. Top Gun is actually really cool because they try to be as realistic as possible. And I think this new movie that's coming out, they have the clear visors. You can see the stretching in the face. At 9 Gs, the blood is draining from your skull. An elephant is sitting on your chest. And you're surviving. And our pilots are in a single-seat aircraft as they're flying, as they're talking on comms, 18 inches apart doing that. Which is incredible. What I like about this new movie as well is it shows that we have female pilots. Yeah. We do have a lot of female pilots in the Air Force, and they are just as good as the men. They're all incredible.
If not better.
Absolutely. Incredible athletes, incredible human beings. So I think this movie will do a lot just for the airshow community in general and as well as our military.
Yeah, I'll ask you that, Jinx, because we have Haley Deegan, who's in the truck series, mm-hmm. who I'm a big fan of. I think she has a very bright future. Danica Patrick, obviously. Several female drivers that are trying to pave the mm-hmm. path, and, you know, with female pilots. I know you have to feel good about that, because I think there's a lot of talent coming up through the ranks.
Oh, absolutely. And it gives all those little girls someone to look at and say, that person looks like me, I can do that too. I met Major Fifi Malkowski when I was in high school, and it was the first time I ever saw someone that, you know, looked like me, a female, and I was like, wow, I think I could do that too.
Yeah, it's just such a cool thing to see. Well, it's great to talk to both of you. I mean, I'm excited. This is, you know, obviously a big race fan, you know, excited for that. But the flyover and the show, everything is always a fun time. Yes. And I've gotten to talk to some of the Thunderbirds before, but good to talk to both of you. So thanks so much for stopping by.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Man, that is so cool. I cannot wait for the flyover. And, you know, I've seen the Thunderbirds before here at the Daytona International Speedway, but really appreciate them for stopping by. Hey, want to give you another reminder before we get to Eric Moses, the president of the Nashville Super Speedway. You can join the Nashville Super Speedway and 102.5 The Game for the official NASCAR Daytona 500 watch party, which is coming up this today at 3rd and Home at 919 3rd Avenue North. So starting at 1 o'clock, come out to 3rd and Home, hang out with us, hang out with the Nashville Super Speedway. You can purchase tickets for the triple header weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway and also win some great prizes from both the game and the Nashville Super Speedway, Music City's home for NASCAR Cup Series racing. Eric Moses, the president of the Nashville Super Speedway, going to join us next as you listen to Chasing Checkers live from the Daytona International Speedway, presented by Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
If you've missed any of today's show, just search Chasing Checkers on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.
And we're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Pike and also Backyard Blues Pools here at the Daytona International Speedway. And I had to run into my friend Eric Moses, the president of the Nashville Super Speedway, because he's everywhere. He has to come to Daytona and check out the 500. This is going to be your first 500, right?
This is my first Daytona 500, but not my first time here to the World Center of Racing.
When you are somebody that runs a facility like the Nashville Super Speedway and you come to a different track, I mean, the antenna is always up. You're always looking for ideas, right?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully ones that don't cost gazillions of dollars to implement. But there are always some really good ideas in terms of fan engagement and experience that goes on at every track you go to. You take a little bit here and there. You see how the signage looks. You see how the people move around the facility. You see what grabs people's attention. And I'm taking notes every day that I've been here.
There was so much buildup to your first race weekend, and it was fantastic at the Nashville Super Speedway last June. Now we're less than a year later and getting ready for the second one. A lot's changed, though, in that time. Speedway Motorsports coming in and buying things. How's that transition been for you and your team?
We're all super excited about it. I mean, to be associated with Speedway Motorsports and the Smith family, who really date back to basically the beginnings of this sport of NASCAR, and have done such great work at all their tracks throughout the country. It's a real great opportunity for us to, you know, expand the bench in terms of depth of experience and ideas and resources and vision and all of the things that are going to help us to get Nashville Super Speedway where we want it to be faster.
Tickets are officially on sale. You went through the renewal process and now they're on sale to the general public. I know, you know, that's always kind of nerve-wracking to do that, but it seems like things going well so far.
Yeah, things are going well and the marketplace is responding as we hope that they would. It's a great place. You know, people want to come to Nashville. We want to give them another reason to come. We had three really good races last year. And maybe Mr. Larson with this new car won't run away from the field this year. And so we think it's going to be great. The combination of not having a lot of time on our track and now with a new car and the setup for that and everything, I think is going to provide some really interesting racing.
So I think I have my seat for the race weekend, so I'm going to be good. But
if not, there's a problem.
But how can people get tickets if they haven't done it already?
866-RACE-TIX, T-I-X, or NashvilleSuperspeedway.com. You can always go to Ticketmaster and buy them there. Act now because we anticipate a sellout again for our cup race. But don't sleep on, you know, our truck race on Friday and our Xfinity race on Saturday. Friday night under the lights again for the trucks, and Saturday's going to be great. So it's going to be a great weekend. People should come out.
I can remember that Xfinity race doing the driver intros. I couldn't get the words Hendersonville, Tennessee out of my mouth for Josh Berry before the crowd started going wild.
that's what's so cool about your track is you're going to have local drivers on the national level, like a Josh Berry, Clay Greenfield in the Truck Series, Jade Buford in the Xfinity Series, that are representing Middle Tennessee at their home track.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, there's such rich tradition in our area, in our state, but certainly in Middle Tennessee, for racing. And people just, they vote with their feet. They come out and they support, and they've supported our track, and we're grateful. And we're going to continue to hopefully exceed their expectations and give them a great weekend, great weather, and all kinds of fun.
You brought up that new car and so much unknown with it. The drivers were so complimentary of the resin on the track last year and how the cars drove, but kind of feels like we're starting all over again, which is exciting at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's like year two is almost like a year one because of the new car. I was out at the Clash last week and saw that, and that was fun, but we didn't really get to see them air it out. And we'll see that tomorrow here down in Daytona. And so by the time they get to us at our point in the schedule, we're about midway through the schedule. It'll be interesting to see how comfortable the drivers have gotten with the new car, and then having that new car on our concrete track. I think there's going to be a lot to watch, a lot of fun.
Eric Moses is with us, the president of the Nashville Super Speedway. I'm very jealous of you, my friend, just so you know, because you got to hang out with Emmett Smith. And growing up a Dallas Cowboys fan, Emmett was I still have his jersey that doesn't fit me anymore. How cool was that for you? Because I know you're a fan as well.
It was super cool. He was a great guy to meet and to talk about. He's very interested in our sport, as you know, co-team owner with Jesse Owuji's team on the Xfinity side. Jesse will be at our race. Emmett says he's going to come to our race. And so it was exciting to be able to talk to that guy about, you know, new people coming into the sport and all the energy and excitement that he sees in our sport as well. So it was a highlight. But I will say this. Not only did I get to meet Emmett yesterday, I got to actually finally meet and talk with Dale Jr. At an event he had. And, man, there could not be a better ambassador for this sport. I mean, just such a gentleman. And we got to talk about the new car and its setup. And you know me, I'm always learning. And it's great to be able to learn in a short conversation with somebody like that.
The cool thing about him is, you know, everybody says when Dale Jr. speaks, everybody listens. And he gets a lot of stuff done. And it's no secret that he's been very involved in the fairgrounds and wanting that. But he came to your place last June and he called you and said, hey, you know what? I didn't know what to expect. I'm sorry. Like, this was great. Now you have him as an ambassador for not only the sport, for your track. How much does that mean to you?
I told him the highlight of my year last year was the message I got from him congratulating us on what we were able to accomplish that weekend, because he is such an ambassador of the sport, and I know he loves it, and I know he loves the fairgrounds because he ran down there a lot. But it means the world, I think, to me, certainly to our staff. Everybody was really excited to know that he thought that we executed really well. And so it's great to be able to contact a guy like that and just pick his brain on things, man, because he knows it. He knows it better than most.
You mentioned how there's new people coming into the sport and how the sport is changing. Obviously, as an African-American track president, we're seeing an influx. Like with Michael Jordan, Emmett Smith are obviously helping that. Bubba Wallace has been an ambassador. Wendell Scott before him. You know, I grew up in the South. I grew up with this sport. It was obviously different. There were things that, you know, I'd like to forget about from the history of this sport. But how cool is it for you to see it change and to see it grow the way it is and going in the right direction?
I'm super excited. I told Steve Phelps yesterday that, you know, I couldn't think of a better time for me personally to be involved in this sport. But I also think maybe for anybody. People feel, and this Emmett talked about this too, people feel the energy and the momentum around our sport. A lot of that has to do with the decisions the Franz family and Steve Phelps and the leadership at NASCAR have made. And some of the things that, frankly, the Smith family and Marcus Smith and the folks at Speedway Motorsports have done to think collectively about how do we move the sport forward together, because we have to create that rising tide that raises all boats. And I think we're doing that now. We're off to such a great start for this 22 season with the Clash and now a sold out Daytona 500. We'll go into that Western swing and we're going to be rolling, man. By the time we get to June and Nashville, I think this may go down as one of the best seasons in NASCAR's recent history.
There's no doubt about that. He is Eric Moses. You're a rock star, by the way, because you've fist bumped like five people while we're standing here doing this interview. So people know who you are now, my friend.
I'm not hard to pick out. I think that might have something to do with it.
Eric, appreciate the time. 1-866-RACETICKS. Get your tickets. Let's sell out the Ally 400 again.
Absolutely. Thank you, my brother.
We'll have more coming here from the Daytona International Speedway. It's all brought to you by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue, Shop Local, Shop Social, and Backyard Blues Pools, ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, let me tell you about this. Out at 3rd and Home, starting at 1 o'clock, come out for our watch party with the Nashville Super Speedway. You can watch the Daytona 500 from there. You can also purchase your tickets to the Ally 400 and the whole weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway and register to win some great prizes from ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Nashville Super Speedway. It all starts at 1 at 3rd and Home.
We're back here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are, of course, live at the Daytona International Speedway, as we have been the last couple of days, and appreciate Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue and Backyard Blues Pools for their coverage, for helping with our coverage here from the Daytona International Speedway. Chase McCabe and Ryan McGee, one of our favorites from ESPN. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, like, in person.
I know.
I love being on the station. I'm on there. Like I'm on there all the time.
Yeah.
And the but we never see each other. So
I know.
It's good. Certainly not when it's not usually in Hoover.
Yeah. SEC media days, and we're talking football, but we're talking racing, which is something that you and I both absolutely love. Now you're around it in Charlotte. It's coming to me in Nashville.
Yeah.
How about this? The last time that we saw each other in person, we've gone from the NASCAR Cup Series coming back to Nashville at the Nashville Super Speedway.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
People were out there supporting it. Now we may have two cup races, one at the fairgrounds.
Yeah, it's amazing. And listen, I've said this to you before, and you're talking to a son of Rockingham, North Carolina. I was there last week. I try to avoid driving past the racetrack, but I drove right past it. And I tell everyone, we learned this in Rockingham, a ticket is a vote.
Yep.
So just because you got two races and they're at two different racetracks and all that's great, if you don't show up and you don't buy tickets, and I'm not talking about buying them in the first year. I'm talking about buying them, you know, season tickets, keep going back.
Year one's easy.
Oh, yeah. At Rockingham got the truck series back.
Yep.
First year was great. Second year, nobody showed up.
Right.
Third year, they have a race. So you can't give them an excuse and to not come back. And so, no, what's cool is, all right, I was just in NASCAR President Steve Phelps' office across the street over here. I'm writing a story for ESPN.com for this weekend. And he has this unbelievable collection of, you know, artifacts behind him that people get. And right there, front and center, was the same Nashville Super Speedway red plastic solo cup that I use. Captain Morgan and I use every single night at my house. but it just tells me that he's excited about it, and everyone's excited about it. So, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, any excuse to get back. And, listen, what they have done with Champions Week is kind of what let them know. You know, it's always, to me, just been a crime that NASCAR wasn't racing in Nashville. If you know your history, then you know they should be there. And so now they're coming back. So, yeah, and been back. And if everybody does what they just did and keeps doing it, you know, they'll never leave.
Yeah, and I think it shows you, too. You talk about Steve Phelps.
Yeah.
I am very impressed with him.
He's so great.
Really have liked what he's done since he's been in that post. He recognizes the future, and they got to go to new places and try new things, like the L.A. Coliseum, giving that a shot. But he also recognizes the roots.
Yep.
And Nashville, whether it's the Super Speedway or their fairgrounds, all this talk of North Wilkesboro, it does give me hope for a place like Rockingham that, you know, when you thought it was dead, buried, and gone
–
sorry, Nick Saban, that it could come back. I mean, do you look at it that way?
No, 100%. And that's what I tell people about Phelps is that people will talk about, you know, he's at the NFL for a decade and a half and all that stuff, but he's been in NASCAR since 2004. I used to work for NASCAR. I worked in NASCAR Media Group. It's NASCAR Productions now. I was in meetings with him. And I'm crazy about it. What people may not know about him is he's a short track guy. Yes, he's a Yankee, right? He's from the Northeast. But he grew up going to the short tracks of New England and upstate New York. And those are his roots as a race fan. And so he wants to get back to those roots. That's why, you know, he greenlit dirt at Bristol. You know, that's why he greenlit that crazy thing that they just did, you know, in the Coliseum in Los Angeles. That was a quarter-mile track.
Right.
You know, and so I'm with you.
His roots.
His roots. And he learned, again, I always go back to – the couple of years I worked at NASCAR, I was in all the meetings with no decision-making power, by the way. I was in all the meetings when I would sit there and they would say, all right, no country music at any events, and we're going to leave Darlington on Labor Day weekend and all this stuff. And I wanted to stand up and go, hell, what are we doing? But I had no say. And Steve didn't have any say at the time. Now he does. And so he learned from the mistakes of back in the day when they got so far away from their roots because they just thought that – they called it the core audience. They thought hardcores would just stick around no matter what.
Sure.
They won't. I tell the college football people this all the time. You know, you can't get too far away from what got you to where you are.
Right.
And I wrote about that when Texas and Oklahoma – you know, crushed us all at Hoover about we're going, you know, when the story broke from Houston about their moving. And I've told her there's a precautionary tale with motorsports is you can't, you got to try new stuff, you know, evolve or die. But
right.
You have to do it in a way that pays tribute to where you came from. And that's what Steve Phelps is really, really good at.
Yeah. And I just feel like he gets it. And a lot of people, Steve O'Donnell, get it that, you know, there's too many racetracks sitting empty, you know, or being torn down for condominiums or things like that, that, you know, you got to take care of those. And I'm all about expansion and building new ones, but you got to be smart about it. And I think in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, it was like bigger is better. And that's not always the case.
It wasn't. And I lived those days, man. That was when I was right out of college, right out of Tennessee. And I was a young field producer. We had a show on ESPN2 called RPM Tonight.
Yep.
I worked on RPM. And so they would send me, and that's back when you're talking about the late 90s now. This is when, you know, the Nashville Super Speedway is when Vegas is Texas is, you know, the California Speedway, all these racetracks open, and that's great. I got no problem with that at all. But they started looking at Seattle and started looking at Manhattan and started looking at Staten Island and the Meadowlands and started looking at Denver and all these places, and they were going to take races away from Talladega and Atlanta and Rockingham and all these places. And so you just got to – When they moved the date from Darlington to Labor Day to California, that was the day I was like, they don't know what the hell is going on.
Right.
And they're still paying the price for that with a lot of old school fans. But if you're paying attention, they're righting those wrongs. And then that begins and ends with the guys you're talking about, Steve Phelps, Steve O'Donnell, and everybody that works with them.
Ryan McGee of ESPN, SEC Network, joining us here. He's in Daytona for the Daytona 500. So do you still get the goosebumps when you walk into this place?
The best. Absolute best. It is – I just got a new contract with ESPN, and basically there's language in there that says I have to go to Daytona and Indianapolis. no matter what I'm doing, college football, college hoops, you know, whatever they're sending, Olympics, whatever they're sending me to do, I want to be here in February, and I want to be in Indianapolis because it is you do this for a long time, right? And you go to a lot of games at a lot of places, and you don't lose the magic, but it's certainly not what it was with the first few times you went there. Never gets old here. It never gets old here, ever. It's one of my favorite days of the year. Everyone's in the best mood ever. And everybody's fans of other sports, like, why in the world would they run their biggest race to start the year? I think it's perfect.
It's awesome.
Everybody's at zero. Everybody's in a great mood. Everybody's uniforms are brand new. The cars are brand new. We get to week two and week 32, fine. Be beat up in a bad mood. But in Daytona, man, everybody's in the best mood. It's the best. I tell everybody, I don't care what – if you don't care a thing about cars, racing, whatever, you have to come to this if you consider yourself not just a sports fan, but, you know, American.
Yeah, it's kind of like back to school, too. You know, like I was walking around seeing people that, you know, I had the opportunity to go to Phoenix.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It was cool to be able to do, you know, the last two points races.
Yeah.
But it's like everybody, like you said, is just smiling in a good mood. The drivers are.
Yeah.
I think they're curious about this new car and how it's gonna go. What have you thought about it so far?
I think it looks great.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
It sounds amazing. I think that the learning curve – I wrote a story about this for ESPN.com on Thursday. What's weird is when you go to the race shops, and over the last few weeks, I live in Charlotte, so I've been to Hendrick and Penske and Gibbs, all these places. The shop's, like, quiet, and there's, like, two cars sitting there, whereas normally there'd be 30 of them. They'd already be building cars for races that were 3 months down the road. And to the point that at Hendrick, they actually went and got some old cars and put them on the shop floor just to make it look normal because it was messing with people's, you know, equilibrium. So once the supply chain thing straightens itself out, and from what all the guys are telling me, this is going to be really hard until about May.
May
is when they think they're going to get their feet underneath them. But the cars themselves look great. And you know, I know Joe Logano didn't want to wreck in the duels on Thursday night, but – that was a crash test that we needed to see.
Yep.
And he said that. I don't want to be the guy. And he said, I feel fine. Car looks good. I mean, you know, those things are tanks.
Right.
But they're also super safe. So I think there's a I like them a lot. And I'm all for cutting costs. You know, you go to these places, what you don't want is just to become Formula One. And that's kind of what was starting to happen with the race teams. They're spending so much money that, you know, it isn't bad for the sport for Michael McDowell to win a race.
You know?
And so when you create a playing field where they can win, it's why we love March Madness, you know, because, you know, Iona can win a game. Norfolk State can win a game. And so you need to create a world where those guys can compete. And yeah, call it a kit car, call it whatever you want. It looks cool. It sounds cool. It's easy to build. And I think it's gonna you know, close that gap at least a little bit.
Hey, do not go anywhere. We have much more with Ryan McGee from ESPN. He'll be back with us in just a few here on Chasing Checkers, special edition brought to you by Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Daytona International Speedway. It is a beautiful day here at Daytona. Appreciate Social Furniture and Backyard Blues Pools for helping out with our coverage this week. Ryan McGee from ESPN. You bring up the safety, and it's ironic to talk about that 21 years ago today.
Yep.
We lost Dale Earnhardt, and he wasn't the only one.
Nope.
Kenny Irwin, Adam Petty. I mean, there were way too many,
yep.
One too many.
Yep.
But we all know that taking the biggest star in the sport and him losing his life right here really started to make some things happen. And it's hard to believe that you've now had three generations of race car because of safety, really,
right,
come through in the last 21 years. Car of Tomorrow looked awful. People didn't like it,
though.
It was necessary.
Yep.
It was the right step. And then you go to the Gen 6 and now the next gen car. It's just crazy to think about how far we've come in 21 years.
Yeah. I mean, and you know this, a year ago, man, this was my life because it was the 20th anniversary. We had a big E60 documentary.
Fantastic.
I appreciate it. And I had a four-part series I did for ESPN.com that was 20,000 words. I mean, the most you'll ever write without a book deal. And going back and reliving all that, and I worked on that thing for months and months and months, a year on the documentary. And, you know, I almost quit. Man, I was in my 20s, and I was right out of school, and all my friends that worked in the business at ESPN, they were going to baseball games and football games and no funerals. I was going to funerals all the time.
Yeah.
Adam Petty was a friend of mine. Kenny Irwin was a friend of mine. I knew Dale Earnhardt. You know, not only that, it was in open wheel racing too. You know,
yeah.
I knew Greg Moore. I knew all these guys. Krosnoff, I knew all those guys. And drag racing. I mean, it all was happening to dirt guys, killing dirt guys left and right.
Right.
And it was just, let's just keep doing it the way we've always done it. Again, I go to my football people all the time and I say, you know, if you don't get aggressive with the helmets and with the pads, and I don't care how cool it looks or it doesn't look, you'll get used to that. Literally the only reason these guys wouldn't put on the Hans device was they didn't like it. It felt uncomfortable and it looked nerdy. That's
right.
Kind of it. I mean, Dale Jr. said that in our E60 piece. So yeah, you think about back when I was literally, I wanted to quit. I remember coming, I came home, I told my wife, I said, I can't do this anymore, because I'm just, I was every race I felt like I was going to, somewhere I was dying. And then it's been since February 18th, 2001, no one's died in a NASCAR National Series.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing to me, and it's the greatest blessing. And I tell you, when we thought Ryan Newman was dead here a couple years ago, there was a feeling. I was in Victory Lane, and I looked around, and you could kind of draw a dividing line between those of us that had lived through all that in the 90s and early 2000s and the people who hadn't.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what to do. And the rest of us kind of had that muscle memory we didn't want to have. All right, let's go to the hospital. You know, let's prepare our obituaries. It's just kind of how we did it all the time back then. So anybody that talks about the good old days, you can have that, because I don't miss that at all.
Yeah, you bring up the Newman thing, because I remember – I wasn't down here, but I remember having the same feeling of like –
and it had been a while.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was like, because, you know, at our station, I'm the NASCAR guy, and so everybody's texting me, like, hey, like, when are they announcing?
Right.
Like, he didn't make it,
right?
Yep. Like, you know, because they're – covering the car and all that stuff. And so I'm having that mental preparation and going back to 2001. And obviously I was a young kid in 2001, but it was that same feeling. And then when you see that picture of him walking out 2 days later, holding his daughter's hands, it goes, Dale's up there smiling.
Yeah.
They're all smiling because unfortunately they're not here to see it, but all that hard work has paid off.
The sacrifice of Dale Earnhardt, it had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone to finally do what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And NASCAR loves to tell you that, oh, we were already working on an R&D center. They were, but safety wasn't really what they were working on. They were working on making cars faster.
Right.
And so the focus of all that shifted. So, yeah, I think about it all the time, man. And again, I told my daughter, so this is my 27th consecutive speed weeks. And I was leaving the house Wednesday, and my daughter said to me, she goes, all right, so what have you learned about, you know, being down there so much? I said, what I've learned is wisdom has nothing to do with being smart. Wisdom is about you're just still around, right?
Yeah.
And so those of us who knew Dale Earnhardt are way outnumbered now by the people who didn't. And anybody that anybody that takes for granted what's going on now, they weren't around back then. But that sacrifice had to happen.
Yeah.
As horrible as that sounds, it had to happen. And as a result, we haven't lost anybody since. And that's not how Dale Earnhardt wants to be remembered.
No.
Dale Jr. and I have had that conversation 100 times. Dale Jr. doesn't want to be remembered as the guy that made everyone aware of brain injuries and concussions. I told him, I said, dude, that's
right.
That's at least 50% of your legacy. And so it's the same for his dad.
Dale Jr., a Hall of Famer now.
Yeah, how about
which
that?
Which is pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That and well-deserved. I mean, people, you have to look beyond – he won a lot of races, for one.
Yeah.
But you have to look beyond just what you did on the racetrack. It's bringing new notoriety to the sport, what he did in the Xfinity Series, ownership, being that guy that when Dale Jr. speaks, everybody listens. It's kind of like his dad used to do back in the day in the garage area.
I tell everybody, Benny Parsons was my hero. I wouldn't work at ESPN if it wasn't for Benny Parsons. Benny Parsons is from Richmond County, North Carolina, Rockingham. I've known Benny my entire life. Benny won, 18 races?
Mm-hmm.
He won a Daytona 500, and he won a championship. Dale Earnhardt won twice that many races. Won a couple of Daytona 500s. And no one questions Benny being in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And it's always, it's what he did when he was done driving. You know, what he did had way more impact. Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s impact off the racetrack and then what he's done since he joined NBC, it's immeasurable. It really is. And so that's the part of it, too. But I don't have it in front of me. When Dale Jr. retired, I wrote that. I went and looked it up, and I figured out how many, 1,500 people, whatever it was, that had raced in the Cup Series at that point, or a couple thousand. And of all those couple of thousand, there were 25 guys that had won, X number of races. And Dale Jr. was on the list.
Yeah,
that's a Hall of Famer. It is,
no doubt,
by any measure. So yeah, no, it was great. And I can tell you this, man, he had a great party that Saturday night. The Hall of Fame thing was on Friday, and I didn't go because I was out of town. But then Saturday night he had a party, we'll never tell the stories about it. I'm not even sure how I got home.
Was Tim Duggar there?
Tim Duggar was there.
That's all I need to know.
Dwight Yoakam. I was standing next to Tim Duggar. And the big surprise was someone was going to perform, and Dwight Yoakam came out there, and Tim Duggar screamed like those girls you see in the old Beatles movies. It was the coolest. Yeah, it was a good night. My wife's still mad at me about that night.
As we wrap this up, Ryan, with Dale Jr. in the Hall of Fame, I feel like for a lot of his career, he was – it's not that he was running from the shadow, but he felt like he had to live up to it.
Right.
Do you feel like now, post-driving, he's more or less accepted it, embraced it, and used it to his advantage and the sport's advantage?
There is no question about it, and he would be – he's told me that. I mean, he would tell you that if he was sitting here. There's I wrote a book with him about his mm-hmm. concussions, and I keep telling him, we need to write the other one now. We need to write the one about your daddy. And it's there's no question – that he's accepted it. It comes with being older. It comes with being a dad now with two girls. It comes with being married. And Amy Earnhardt is one of my favorite people on planet Earth. She doesn't get the credit that she deserves. And so it's there's no question he's embraced it. And he's learned how to live with it. And if you know the story, and you know that he didn't really know his dad till he was forced to move into the house with him when his mother's house burned down.
Right.
And then they sent him off to military school. I mean, it wasn't – their relationship – was just literally starting to get close in the weeks leading up to the first time that Dale Jr. remembers his dad walking over to him on the grid before the race and going, hey, man, go get him. Good luck. We're going to kick their butt. Was this race on February 18, 2001. So
Dale had the plan.
He had the plan. And it was but they were just getting there. Right. They were just getting. And part of that was Dale Sr. Dale Sr. was just starting to understand what it was like to be a dad and what it was like to be, just to be a granddad, to be all these things. And so it was, it's part of that tragedy. But, Dale Jr.'s the kid everybody thinks they know with the hat backwards and all that stuff, he's still in there, but that's not who he is anymore.
He's a little different.
We all are.
I always love these conversations because we're not talking about, okay, who's going to win the race on Sunday. Yeah. We just have these philosophical where the sport is.
You know what? It's because we love it.
Yeah.
And I've always known that about you, and that's why, you know the deal, man. We all do these interviews and stuff, and I love doing them, but – I can tell him. The first time you and I had a conversation live on the radio, I was like, all right, this dude is a dude. So that's why this happens.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, good to see you as always. Yeah. And by the way, I wanted to bring this up. The Bubba E60 piece, Bubba Wallace, also fantastic.
Thank you, man.
His story is awesome. And you know, I didn't know all the stuff about he and his dad and the rift there, and I know that had to be tough to sit there and ask those questions.
Well, and what a gift it is that someone like Bubba trusts you enough to be open with you.
Yeah,
and is comfortable enough. You know, when we sat down, that was supposed to be a 30-minute interview. We talked for 3 hours.
I believe it.
And he's a good dude.
He is.
And anyone who tells you he's not has never met him. They whatever they read on Twitter is what they're rolling with, or they just don't like him for reasons that we're not going to get into.
Yeah.
That's a good dude right there. And anybody that he's just a good old boy from Mooresville. And he is. Born in Mobile, loves the Vols, you know, and so it's he's just a good dude. So anybody that tells you that he's not, they're either lying to you or they've never met him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because every time I've interviewed him, he's been great.
And all he is open to a fault. Yep. And you know, I'm glad we got our documentary out there first, but I'm excited to see this Netflix show.
Yeah, me too. Yep. Me too. Ryan, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing it. We'll do it again soon.
You're the man.
Ryan McGee, ESPN. Oh, man, one of my favorites. Always good to chat with him. We have a special treat coming up here in just a few minutes. You're not going to want to miss this because I'm going to go in the garage area. We're going to talk to two different drivers, starting with Ross Chastain. He is now with Team Trackhouse. Chip Ganassi, of course, sold their team. He moves into the number one. So we're going to talk to him when we come back here on Chasing Checkers live at the Daytona International Speedway. It is all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools. Ross Chastain and Greg Biffle coming up next here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game at the Daytona International Speedway. It's finally here, the morning of the Daytona 500, the Great American Race, standing in the garage area with Ross Chastain. And lots changed for you, Ross, in the past year. You came here to Daytona in the 42 car for Chip Ganassi Racing. That team gets sold. Now you're in the number one for Team Trackhouse. How excited are you to start your first Daytona 500 with that team after going through it all last year?
Yeah, man, I am. I learned a lot. Last year was really humbling. It really, really taught me a lot of things the hard way that I wish I would have known before last season started. So if I could go back one calendar year, I'd tell my one-year younger self a lot of things. But the main thing is that it's going to work out. So just keep trusting the process. You know, this Super Speedway stuff is anybody's game, but it's important to get our season started off right, being competitive, and the finish will be what it'll be.
How nerve-wracking was it at times last year for you once the news came out that Chip was selling the team to Trackhouse? You didn't really know what was going to happen, and then you finally get the call that, hey, you're the driver, you're staying in the car, number's going to change, but you're moving to this new team.
It was initially I wanted to throw up when I heard Chip was selling. You know, I signed with him thinking and planning on that the guy that had been here 20 years would be here 20 more, and then he'd probably outlive me in the sport. And just turned out it was his time to step out of NASCAR. So he's still a racer. He's still out racing all over the world, and a friend that I'll always have, and a mentor, and a guy I'll look up to. But, you know, within a few minutes of catching my breath and not puking in the trash can next to me, I text Justin and just told him that I want this. You know, that's all I said. He said, yeah, give me some time. And about a month, it took about a month to work through everything. And we figured out, we're going to get this thing done. And we're off to the races for the next few years.
I think the really cool part of Trackhouse, and, you know, Justin Marks is based in Nashville, which is, of course, where I'm from. And
he's a racer, so he gets it. He speaks the same language as you do. Is that something that was appealing to you, knowing that you were going to drive for a race car driver?
Yeah, that's incredibly important. Just somebody that understands what we go through behind the wheel. You know, I've raced against him. He's still an incredible race car driver. I still ask him for advice. He laughs at me. I'm like, I'm telling you, man, like, I need your input because, yeah, you aren't in these next-gen cars, but, like, just his knowledge behind the wheel is far longer and superior to mine, and he's probably forgotten more things behind the wheel than I've ever learned. So I still go to him almost weekly for stuff, and whether it's bad memories he has or good memories, it's worth it for me to ask. And, you know, the other thing is that he's young, man. He's closer to my age than really any owner I've ever had, and he just obviously is a lot farther along in life than me, but still age-wise we're more similar than I've ever had, and we can relate to some things. He can still remember his 20s, so that's good.
Yeah, and with Trackhouse, we're talking to Ross Chastain, the driver of the number one. With Trackhouse, you know, even though Justin's been involved in the sport, Pitbull, obviously a new owner in the sport, we're seeing new teams come about. How cool is it to kind of be on the ground floor of that?
Yeah, I mean, I talked with Ty and Justin a few years ago when this was just an idea and just kind of on a dry race board, and it's worked out exactly how he said. That's what me and Justin have kind of slapped ourselves all the way leading up to today. You know, every time we see each other, like, we can't believe it that I can't. And he's like, man, this was part of the process. This was the plan. I'm like, I know, but it's, it's like, it's crazy to think you're going to come into the Cup Series and operate like this in year two. So the foundation that CGR built is there, and now Trackhouse stands poised to take that who knows where. You know, in the success of Chevrolet and CGR's past will carry us now. And we've got a lot of familiar faces for me, and bringing over Daniel and the 99 team from what was RCR on the RCR campus is really, we stand on our own two feet now, and now we've got a shot to go fight with these guys.
Yeah, what's it like having Daniel as a teammate? He's got the Tootsie's car, which is near and dear to my heart, being the Nashville guy that I am, but he's a very talented race car driver too.
Oh yeah, yeah. He bought into Trackhouse year one, right, or year zero, and that's cool. Daniel and I feel like our what we've talked since we really got to know each other once this came together is, you know, there's the obvious language barrier and the jokes there, but we speak the same language, man. It's crazy. We've both been in really good opportunities, and we both had limited success, and we want more. And, you know, we've had things taken away from us that we didn't feel were fair. So now this is another opportunity, and, you know, based on I know what I feel, and what Daniel said, we both realize how quickly this can be taken away and how quickly you can be out of this garage. So, you know, I don't take that for granted. I don't take days like this for granted where I get to drive into Daytona as a Daytona 500 competitor with a chance to win the Daytona 500. And, you know, no matter what, that makes all this chasing this racing dream worth it just for the chance.
There are always nerves on the morning of the Daytona 500, but every driver in this garage has talked about the unknowns with the next-gen car. Now, I know a lot of you have said next week is really when you're going to run into that because Daytona is Daytona, but Denny also said the other day that these cars lose the draft pretty easily. So what is that extra level of nervousness going into 500 miles, putting 40 cars on this track in this new car for the first time?
Well, I'd say my nerves started 2 weeks ago in L.A. when we missed the race. That was pretty bad. So, you know, we've already been humbled on the one car. We didn't make the clash, and we took Monday and Tuesday to look through it and try to understand why and how we could be better going back. And Wednesday morning, we woke up after the clash ready to come and compete and win the Daytona 500. So that'll be our mentality out of here no matter what. You know, I thought about it when I woke up this morning that no matter what, I woke up about 7:30 and – probably no matter what, I'm gonna wake up about 7:30 tomorrow and I'm gonna get up and go about my day, so no matter what happens. And that's my mentality, and we'll be ready for California and Fontana in the morning.
Do you feel like that guys are gonna see what this thing can do early, or are they gonna let it play out like the Daytona 500, like they try to, because as you know, can't win it on the first lap, but you can lose it?
I really have no idea. We have the best race car drivers in the world in my opinion, and a bunch of them wrecked on lap 13 last year, so it was building for several laps, and I got out of it went to the back of the pack and luckily was barely able to slow down in time. But I have no idea. If I see that same, aggressiveness early, I'll be out of the pack and in the back, just because it's 500 miles, man. And like you said, you can lose it quick. And, I don't know, though. I don't know that question is really ready to be answered. And I think that's what makes our sport so cool.
Ross, best of luck today in that number one Advent Health Chevy, and we'll do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
I think Ross Chastain is poised to have a good year with Team Trackhouse. They're going to take even more steps towards their goals of winning races and competing for championships, and it all starts today at the Daytona 500. One guy making his return to the Cup Series, the Biff, Greg Biffle. I asked him the other day in the press conference why.
Chase McCabe, Chasing Checkers Radio, 102.5 The Game. You haven't been full-time for a while, and I know a lot of the veteran drivers were curious about this car. Is it just curiosity of how the new car will drive that kind of led you to want to do this? What was your motivation to come back?
You know, I think the opportunity to drive good equipment was intriguing. You know, it was RCR build with a Hendrick engine. So that was an intriguing thing for me to come back. Obviously the new car I want to see, you know, what they're about, what they drive like. And be honest with you, I've been talking with John for a couple of years about, you know, putting a program together. So it's ironic that it just came together last minute and this happens to be the car. Because potentially it could have been last year, but I'm glad it came together when it did.
So when I heard that answer, I wanted to get even more information. I went into the garage area, and I talked to the driver of the number 44, Greg Biffle. In the garage with Cup Series veteran, back in the Cup Series, Greg Biffle. The Biff is back at Daytona, and I know fans are very excited about that. How are you feeling? It's been a while.
I'm feeling good. You know, we had a great 150 race. The duel went good for us. You know, we finished 13th. Had a little hiccup in the pits putting fuel in it. But other than that, you know, we were able to keep in the draft, to keep on the, you know, lead lap for the most part. And now we're working on the car, trying to make it better for the 500.
You said the other night after the duels in your press conference that you wouldn't have done this if you didn't think you had a chance to be competitive and a chance to win. I mean, you're not a full-timer anymore. With the horsepower you have in this car, what makes you feel like you have a good shot at it?
Well, I think, you know, prior to getting in it and coming down here and doing it was the fact that RCR built the car and Hendrick supplied the engine. After practice, I was a little skeptical of, you know, we didn't have the speed we needed. But then we get in the 150 and how good the car drove in traffic and changed lanes and stayed up with the draft, that gave me a lot of confidence for Sunday that, you know, I've got a good enough driving car, and if I can get myself in the right position and stay in the draft, I could be, you know, certainly have the opportunity or be a contender on Sunday. So, you know, all those things, we know anything can happen. Shoot, we could end up running, you know, 30th or 35th, but just as easily we could run 10th or be in line to win it. So we know anything can happen. So I feel pretty confident at this point that we're going to be in a decent spot.
How much have you had to change with your driving style with this car? Obviously one that's new to everybody, but you've never been in this car before. Have things had to change for you personally since you last came to Daytona?
Not that much. The car drives fairly similar to a truck or, you know, the old Cup car with a lot of drag. That's what it reminds me of. So there's some ergonomics that are different, you know, sequential shifter, you know, different digital dash than what I'm used to. So there's some different things inside the cockpit, but overall it's fairly similar.
When you got out of the car, I guess it's been 5 years ago, full time, the sport was starting to make a turn where it looked like fans were coming back to the racetrack, that the TV ratings were starting to pick back up. You see it now. It feels kind of like the good old days of the fans coming back to the track.
It does. You know, this place sold out for the race on, I believe, Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, it's a testament to people interested in the sport. It's not hard to get people interested in racing cars. You know, cars are a part of everyone's life for the most part. And, you know, it's a fun sport to watch and be around.
Would you entertain the idea of coming back full-time, or do you kind of like making your own schedule at this point?
Well, I have to admit, I like making my own schedule. I think a lot of people wouldn't argue with that. But, you know, again, I said with the right opportunity, competitive race cars, you know, I want to go to the racetrack trying to win the race and know I have a chance to run in the top 10, then, you know, just going to the track knowing we're kind of beat, but we're startup team and we're going to finish, you know, in the high 30s. You know, you could stomach that for a few races as you build your program, but at some point, that you know, you have to be where you're running competitive, and you have the opportunity to build competitive cars showing up to the racetrack each week. And that's a tall order in this bit, you know, in here. It's, you know, go start an NFL team and expect to be competitive, or football, about, you know, basketball, baseball. It's not easy to do. And so, you know, with the right amount of effort and obviously money, you know, it takes big sponsors to get this going, an alliance with a big team that already has some of that information. That'll be the right opportunity that I'd come back and do more of them.
Greg, before I let you go, I do have to ask you, you obviously won at the Nashville Super Speedway when it opened. I'm from Nashville. It's good to see that place reopened again. How do you look at it from your point of view of being back in that market and how important it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important market, and I was shocked that the Cup cars didn't go there earlier. I thought it was a great racetrack. It's in a great spot. I think fans will be really surprised and happy when they see the Cup cars running there. It's going to be a good show.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate the time.
Yep, thank you.
So good to see Greg Biffle back in the NASCAR garage. Up next, we wrap it all up. We set you up for the Daytona 500. Can Hendrick Motorsports continue their dominance, and does it start today with maybe somebody like Kyle Larson? We'll discuss that next here on Chasing Checkers. It's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, The Game Nashville app. We're back here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on The Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe live at the Daytona International Speedway. It's all presented by Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue. Shop local, shop social, and Backyard Blues Pools. Really appreciate them jumping on board for sponsoring our coverage here at Daytona to send me down here, because you all know this is a dream of mine. I love this place. This will be my third Daytona 500 coming up today, and it's been a fun one so far. I mean, the duels, we saw some unpredictability in that. Joey Logano has the first big wreck in the next-gen car. He will go to a backup today. And also, you know, exciting races in the Truck Series, the ARCA Series, and the Xfinity Series last night here at the Daytona International Speedway. So congratulations to all those drivers and involved in that and those races for living their dreams here at the Daytona International Speedway. But let's talk about today. Kyle Larson is on the pole for the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. Alex Bowman, his teammate, is on the outside pole. Brad Keselowski lines up third, followed by his teammate at RFK Racing, Chris Buescher. Then Austin Cindric, who took over the two car for Brad Keselowski, he is fifth for Team Penske. Michael McDowell, last year's Daytona 500 winner, he is in sixth. Then Ryan Blaney, Harrison Burton, the rookie, Chase Briscoe, Kyle Busch round out the top 10. Chase Elliott, Christopher Bell, Eric Jones, Martin Truex Jr., Tyler Reddick, Bubba Wallace, Kurt Busch, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Ross Chastain, who we just talked to, and Joey Logano, your top 20. This is going to be an exciting and unpredictable race, like it always is, but even more so because of the next-gen car. But there is a team that everybody needs to pay attention to, that you have been paying attention to. What am I saying? And that's Hendrick Motorsports. I asked Jeff Gordon, who is now a vice chairman with Hendrick Motorsports, the other day in his press conference, I asked him about this lineup. And since he's been at Hendrick Motorsports, is this the most talented lineup he has seen? Jeff, you are a part of some pretty talented teams at Team Hendrick, obviously, with teammates like Jimmy and Dale Jr., Kyle Busch. But looking at these four drivers, all under the age of 30, is this maybe the best collection of talent that you've seen come through those doors?
definitely, and it's the if you, you got to take all the components right. I think it's the young driver lineup and talent that we have there, along with the chemistry that they have with their crew chiefs and car chiefs and pit crew. It's where Hendrick Motorsports is at right now. You know, at the top of their game. So I think you put all those parts and pieces together. It certainly is a fun time to be a part of Hendrick Motorsports. But those teams right now are fun to watch. Just fun to listen to. And also, I think the systems that are in place right now and how they can transfer the information around. And Rick alluded to it, but to have, you know, those four cars come down here and be that close to one another shows you what's happening inside the company, inside the walls, and how they're sharing information, what they're doing with the information, how they're pushing one another. And I think that's one of our strengths right now. And our driver lineup is doing that very, very well. They're constantly pushing one another, learning from one another, and also wanting to outdo one another. So, but all in a positive, good way. I think that, you know, you've got Chase, who's the veteran now at Hendrick, and he's just in a very comfortable place, knows what he's capable of doing, knows what his team's capable of doing, and I think, you know, that he's just rock solid, you know, especially on the long runs. You got Kyle Larson came in and certainly set the world on fire last year, and I think he's obviously blended in well between he and Cliff and the team. But when you take Alex and you take William, I think these guys, even though Alex won four races last year, he was disappointed that he didn't get further into the playoffs. I think both those two guys are really at this point of about to break out to be real superstars in the sport. So I'm excited to see how that unfolds and evolves for those two guys.
I know it's crazy to think about, but it really is. You have Kyle Larson, who had so much untapped potential, was just starting to tap that potential when, you know, he had his mistake and was fired from Ganassi Racing, but he comes into the best equipment in the garage, and you saw it. I mean, he won 10 races in the championship in his first year with Hendrick Motorsports. Alex Bowman, it took a little while. He had the pressure of taking over the 88 for Dale Jr. and then the 48 for Jimmy Johnson, but he moves into that 48 car, and he starts winning races and competing for championships. William Byron is just scratching the surface of what he can do, and I think he is certainly one to potentially watch today in the Daytona 500 as somebody that can win. And then Chase Elliott, of course, who won a championship 2 years ago, is somebody that is very much in his prime. So these guys are young. They're in some of the best equipment. And I know the new car is going to be unpredictable for everybody, but I think Hendrick has always been ahead of the curve on things, and they're showing it so far in Speed Weeks with lining up two cars on the front row. So the confidence should be high for Hendrick Motorsports. It should be scary for the other drivers in the garage. And speaking of confidence, Jill Jelnick of Fox 17 interviewed Kyle Larson, the defending champion, the other day and shared that audio with us. So thank you, Jill and Fox 17, for allowing us to use this. But she asked him about confidence coming off the championship.
Kyle, you won your first NASCAR Cup Series title just last season. Fox 17 even covered your championship weekend here in Nashville. And now you're rolling into the Daytona 500, the defending champion. How confident are you heading into this new NASCAR season?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely confident because my race team is strong. But it's a totally different race car than we had last year when we won the championship. So there's not much you can take from it, but just the confidence that you have in your team and mechanics and all the engineers that they've done their homework and that we are going to be fast to start this year. And I feel like we have started really well. We were pretty good in the Clash a couple weeks ago. And then to have all of our cars as fast as they were in qualifying last night was definitely a confidence booster. So look forward to the race on Sunday and also look forward to getting out of Daytona and getting to race on some other tracks to see how we're going to stack up with the competitors.
I love Larson, how modest he is with things and like, oh, well, you know, it's a new car. You never know. The kid's talented. I don't think it matters. He didn't test at Daytona because he was racing. That just shows you how committed he is. to what he's doing. And I say that like he's committed because he goes out and races and he wins. He let Dale Jr. shake down the car, which I think was beneficial. Dale Jr. is so good around this place. Why wouldn't you want him to drive this new car and give some feedback to the team? So I thought that was smart. Hendrick Motorsports is going to be very tough to beat this year, starting today at the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. Let's get to some Sunday money as we put a bow on things. I don't think this should be a surprise to anybody because he's a three-time Daytona 500 winner, but Denny Hamlin is listed as the favorite from BetMGM at plus 800, but Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott right behind him. Larson at plus 900, Elliott at plus 1,000. Some others to keep in mind, Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, teammates from Penske at plus 1,200. Willie B is plus 1,400. Alex Bowman plus 1,800. So that wraps up Hendrick Motorsports. Let me give you some long shots that I like. I do like Kevin Harvick at plus 2,000. He has shown some speed. But you know who else has shown speed and has a ton of value from BetMGM? The defending Daytona 500 champion, Michael McDowell, at plus 4,000. He did his press conference yesterday because the defending champion will do that and was asked how he was feeling.
Yeah, it's really been a great week altogether. It's, you know, with the test down here, we still had some things that we wanted to try and practice, so we're able to utilize that time pretty well. Duels went smooth, and yeah, so we've been near the, you know, the top of the sheets most of the weekend, and we're really fast in the duel, so feel good about, you know, tomorrow. But yeah, it's kind of slowly been that build up getting ready for tomorrow. And today we opted out of practice, so you know, nerves are kind of down and relaxed. And then tomorrow morning you wake up and you start to feel the pressure of what it's going to look like for, you know, try to defend the Daytona 500.
He's had speed all week, so I wouldn't rule him out, even though he's a long shot. With this new car, I think they're much more closer together than they have been, and he won the thing last year, so you can't rule him out. Ross Chastain, who I talked to earlier, also at plus 4,000. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is another one with value at plus 3,300, somebody that has won at this place before and has shown some speed and some skill. Let's give you some super long shots. Noah Gregson making his first start, plus 10,000. Ty Dillon, plus 8,000. So if you want to dabble, I mean, this is the place to do it because you never know what's going to happen in the Great American Race, the Daytona 500. You can hear it coming up today at 12:30 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can go out to our watch party at 3rd and Home with the Nashville Super Speedway starting at 1 o'clock. They'll have prizes to give away and drinks specials and all of those things. So go check that out. Enjoy the race. That is going to do it. We're back at it Sunday at 8 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But I want to thank Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue for their sponsorship, Shop Local, Shop Social, and also Backyard Blues Pools for helping us out with the Daytona 500 coverage this week. It has been a blast. Enjoy the race today. We'll be back at it next Sunday at 8 on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.